my pleasure to welcome you to the Rice Value Chain side event session. The title of the session is Towards Import Substitution and Staple Crop Food Security. I indicated earlier that what you have in your program in terms of keynote speaker, the person himself is not here, so we have a replacement. I myself, as moderator, I'm replacing my boss. I'd like to introduce myself as Bruce Oliver, last name, Samuel, first name. I'm the director of strategic partnerships at Africa Rice. So for our keynote, we are replacing Mr. Dangote with Yost of Grow Africa. And then after he, I'll give him at least 10 minutes to talk about how to leverage investments to boost the rice sector in West Africa. Then what we will do, I'll go around to the panelists per table. So right now, if we have panelists who are sitting together in one table, I would like at least for you to move. At least one to move to another table. So at least for every table, we have one panelist. Let me call out the names of the panelists. We have Mr. Jack Khan of Interval. Okay, Jack, but you're sitting with Dembele, so somebody has to move. Huh? On top of that, you guys are two francophones, so. is Peter Ville here? Peter? Okay, Peter, you are the only one on your table. You're the only panelist on your table, then that's fine. Yes, then you're fine. You're fine. You're fine where you are. What about Ben Valk? Ben, okay. You're the only panelist on your table, right?
I think so.
Okay. And then Stefan of CARI, GTZ. Okay, Stefan, you're the only panelist on your table. I think so too. Huh? Maybe I can get my colleagues to come and join Stefan. Okay. And Ade of Olam. Okay, Ade is fine. We have Najiru Sal of CNCR. He's not here. Okay. What about Patrick Bedier? No. So we're missing two, and we add one. Dembele of ONDR. Dr. Dembele, il faut chercher. Mais vous avez tombé d'accord avec Jack? Mais il faut qu'on fasse ça tout de suite, non? Parce qu'on n'a pas le temps. Hein? Okay, in that case, then we have six tables, huh? Six tables with panel members. I believe after Yost has done his presentation, he probably can join the table to help in the discussions. Okay. Without much ado, then I'll call on Yost to set the scene so that we know what we are talking about in terms of rice in the ECOWAS region. Yost, please.
Thank you. I'm honored to try and fill the shoes of somebody like Dangote, so let's just forget about that or immediately. I'm really here because I've been working on rice and whatever is constraining us to invest in rice over the past couple of years with many investors, many companies, many stakeholders, which was quite a journey up till now. And based on that, I think I can hopefully share, add some value here in the discussion. And the true real question today is, if we want to do business in rice, how can we really know which number to call if you want to close a deal? Because that's the question I always get. Who do I call? I want the private sector. Who do I call? I want to work with ECOWAS. Who do I call? I want to work with the Nigerian government on inputs. Who do I call? Well, they're all in my phone, so you can always ask me. But that's obviously not what I do. And that's obviously not the role of Grow Africa, but it is the role of Grow Africa to help understand that and to help you guys to go from what is kind of the situation today still, unfortunately, towards a more aligned way of collaboration. So, in order to do that, let's just first look at why we are doing this. Well, investors, entrepreneurs, we do that because you can make good money there. Not the typical trading money, you know, having import, export, and making a good margin on that, which is obviously interesting and relatively low risk, but strategic money with real long-term investments, because the gap is huge. And that requires a lot of collaboration, but it also offers a lot of business opportunities. However, if you then ask a question, how? I'm really astonished. I was entering the office of Monsieur Dembele, and we just had a meeting with a gentleman from CART, very nice guy, who we met in Johannesburg with NEPAD. And I was sitting there waiting with my colleague to meet with Mr. Dembele. And for some reason, I thought, I wouldn't be surprised that the guy I met in Johannesburg is actually sitting in that room as a result of which we have to wait. And that was correct. That was actually the coordinator for CART, with whom we had a meeting, but we didn't even know from one another that we're going to the same guy just after one another. That's not very efficient. That's not very, you know, smart, if you like. This is just a quick overview. I don't know if you can read it. But if you look all the stuff going on in the region, interventions, all sorts of really good programs, by the way, I'm not challenging that at all. But a lot of them don't even know from each other's existence. Stand alone that they collaborate, stand alone that we use those resources, those millions of dollars put behind that, that brain power in there to have a more directed force. And by the way, that helps as well if you want to work with private sector, because remember, this is a private sector perspective. So they know who to call. You tell me who to call in West Africa if you want to do business. I don't know the right question. I think you need to call a couple of guys and ladies for that matter. So this is a very key point to be aware of. There can also really be some money made, because often that's challenged. This is just one example of exercises done. Actually, this was done by Gates Foundation. We've done some exercises like this as well. There's companies who did this as well. If you go through the P&L of running a business in rice, there's a healthy margin. However, that requires that everybody plays his position. In this example, this is assuming a 32% import tariff, which, by the way, is existing. You have import tariffs across the region, and some of them are a lot higher than this one. However, they need to be enforced, because if they're not enforced, the whole P&L collapses. So this is just an example on how you can really build a profitable business case if you go through the numbers and understand the value chain. But as I think also Jack outlined this morning, and Ben, if the chain is not well connected, and if it has a weak linkage for whatever reason, you know, you get into trouble. And that has happened, as we all know. So, what's holding us back? I kind of sort of anticipating on that. It's not the investment commitments. This is just an overview of private sector investment commitments in West Africa to produce, grow, and sell rice. Not to import it, but to produce and grow it and sell it and market it in West Africa. From West Africa for West Africa. Adding up to around about $2 billion in investment commitments. So the private sector is there. They are ready to invest. I have it in writing for you if you want to see it. And it's not just one company. It's not just multinational companies. It's different companies. It's a whole portfolio. And this is the short list. And actually, there's a lot more of them. So what's holding them back doing that? I kind of outline on that. And this is actually feedback. Huh? This is not something we came up with. This is what they came up with. It's what we call an annual stock-taking process we do every year to get feedback from private sector, how they are doing, how well they are performing, and what's holding them back. Well, the policy enforcement and the consistency is a big, big barrier. Integrated viable business models with profitability throughout the value chain is a big challenge. Not to mention, by the way, the subsidized regions, which was touched as well upon, because it's not just Europe and the US, but go to Thailand and ask them how they get their rice paid, as one example, and there's many others. And last but not least, you need to have your water infrastructure, because it has a huge impact on the performance of your land, and if you can combine that with a proper extension model, you can really boost your yields, but you have to do that. And that's not happening, and it's definitely not happening in an orchestrated, well-aligned manner. It is happening to some extent, but again, it's not aligned. So, if you then look at why we would do that, apart from companies making some money, I just wanted to help you, Monsieur Dembélé, en ce cas-là aussi, d'avoir quelques fiches ici en français, pour changer un peu. So like that, everybody still pays attention, I hope. This is actually something for society. This is not just for business. This creates jobs. ECOWAS is spending $5 billion annually on Forex, giving it to Asia and India. Why? I'm a simple Dutch guy. I don't get it. You can make money, you can grow your economy, you can create jobs, you can double, even triple farmers' income. What's holding us back? So these numbers have been run through by very reliable sources. So it has a huge broader economic impact, which obviously has other advantages as well. So there's a lot to gain. So how do we make this happen in summary? This is kind of sort of trying to get into the discussion we're going to have together, which I hope is going to be fun and relevant and straightforward, because that's exactly what we need. We really need to think about, okay, how can we really get this business model functioning properly, consistently, so guys have an appetite to invest and really do it? How can we get this policy properly enforced in a consistent manner so we can have a predictable environment to invest in? This is something I borrowed from Rabobank, actually, which describes as one of the key success factors of a good investment market in food and agriculture. Predictable, stable markets. That's ideal for a banker and for an investor in general. And last but not least, infrastructure, which again is not something you can just put on Olam to do, like they had to do in Nasarawa State, or roads to get to those estates or plantations, which they had to do. I think it was 100 miles of roads, Ade, you guys constructed there. I mean, that's kind of mixing things up in my simple view. So, therefore, this has to be rooted in good, strong public-private partnerships. Okay, so basically, that leads me to the end of my presentation, to set the scene a little bit. And Samuel, if I allow you to introduce the breakout, we try to put it on a slide to give you a bit of an idea. But what we really would like you to do is not to listen to us, definitely not to me, but to listen to your colleagues at the table and think about deals, think about business. And that's what we would like you to focus on together. You will have table leads, as Samuel will outline, and some key drivers in terms of questions you could ask yourselves or others. And the key idea is that you would be able to report back either in terms of a case which is already happening. It could be like mills already in place, but you still need guys to operate them. Or it could be a business case which is already happening, but you need an investor for the second round, or plans you have in mind and you would like to launch, but you still need support to get to the first phase in yourselves. So, having said all that, I would like to hand over to you.
Okay, I have a mic. Thanks. Thank you for keeping within another 10 minutes. What I'm going to do now, I'm going to give a 3 to 5 minutes to every panel member to say something, a few words from their table. And when that is done, we can then allow the tables to delve deep into the discussion and talk about what we have up there on the screen. I'll start with Jack.
for asking me to start. That session is quite important. As you know, a number of countries have really decided to boost the production. So I really want to emphasize on, again, the business model. The business model to have the infrastructure in place, the business model about the value chain, the business model about market. It has to be a market-driven approach. Policy, therefore, is very clear. And let us be very, very clear. There will be no massive investment in rice production if the policy is not right. So I think we have come to a stage where we have to put things on the table and simply stop repeating the same thing. We all know what are the issues. It's really about defining and agreeing and coming back at the end of this session of what it will need to take it to the next level.
Okay, thank you, Jack.
Thanks, everyone. I'm Peter Veal, Head of Business Development for Syngenta for Africa, Middle East, and been working on rice for a number of years in West Africa. And let me just give my insights. Good overview. Thanks, Juice. I think, you know, technically it's simple, but we all know in reality it's not so simple, right? Otherwise it would happen quicker than it is. So let's get underneath it a little bit from my perspective, quite quickly, from a private sector perspective. You know, what are the drivers? The drivers are clear. There's a big gap and why these countries are importing. They shouldn't be. But we need, you said it, we need a business case. This isn't philanthropy. And there are a number of kind of question marks over that at the minute, really putting a solid business case. So policy, to Jack's point, is critical. Challenges are immense, but you know what? They're pretty similar to what we've heard in practically every session about smallholder agriculture in Africa. You know, we call it the five A's. It's all about, you know, aggregation, the awareness, or the knowledge the farmers have, the availability of inputs, the affordability, the finance question, and last but not least, in fact, this probably needs to come first, the access to market. Where can they sell it? Where is the demand? But let's not talk about challenges. Let's talk about quickly about solutions. We work in Nigeria, and I would separate at the minute West Africa into two. You know, we see a scenario in Nigeria where, for obvious reasons, there's a lot of facilitating policy, there's a lot of alignment, and rice is driving incredibly quickly in Nigeria. Investments going in, and the partnerships are in place. But you know what? We have to adapt as a private sector. And when we first went in, you know, my bosses just want us to sell and launch our hybrid rice seeds in Nigeria. You know what? The market's not ready for them. The actual extra investment that farmers have to make is not worth it. They're not ready. They don't have the money. They don't believe the returns are there. You have to evolve the sector. So we're working. It's great to see these guys in the room. We're working with Africa Rice to get access to open pollinated varieties that we improve and we sell in conjunction with other partners along the value chain, right? With Dangote, with off-takers, and with the likes of Technoserve to actually do a lot of the outreach and training. And you know what? It works. It takes time, but it works. And we're seeing yields in Nigeria now on the fields. We're working up to 8 tons a hectare. It's good stuff. Now, the business model, that works, but what needs to happen in the rest of Africa? You know, we're in Cote d'Ivoire right now, and to me, you know, this is critical because there's a lot of players here who have to play a role, and the key point to me is it has to be sequenced in the right way. We very often get the sequencing wrong. So we've got an orchestra, all the instruments are there, but if the conductor doesn't know what he's doing, you get a horrible noise, right? If the conductor knows what he's doing, it's a beautiful sound. So, you know, we have to make sure that AFDB, for instance, releases the funds to get the infrastructure correct, the infrastructure in, because without that basic infrastructure, it's pointless training farmers, it's pointless giving them better inputs, when ultimately they can't get the potential out of that input. The governments need to put the right policy in place, as we said before. The partnerships need to come together to make this happen. You heard about FTMA, Farm to Market Alliance, at lunch. We have prioritized as an alliance French West African rice with five countries, starting in three. those that saw would probably see we actually signed an LOI with Jack and Interval yesterday to begin to explore this. So we are committed, that investment is there. We just need you guys to collectively get behind us and make it happen. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Peter. Since we are over there, maybe we can just move to Ade. Then we'll come back here.
Thank you all. My name is Ade, I'm Vice President for Olam, based out of Nigeria. My thoughts are not radically different from the other three speakers, but I would just quickly like to talk from a private sector perspective. I'm sure you all heard Hughes when he was alluding to the fact that in providing your infrastructure, every private company technically is a government on its own, providing its own roads, you know, power, irrigation, and the likes. I mean, let me give you a quick example about Nigeria. Nigeria consumes around about, you know, depending on the data you believe, is around about 7 million tons, okay? Between 5.5 and 7 million tons, okay? Of which we were producing as at 2 years ago around about 2.7. We've added another 1 million tons to the yield. But again, our problem basically right now in Nigeria is the problem of smuggling. So that's a major issue. So when you have about 2 million tons being smuggled across the border, that undermines your farmers and undermines your production. And again, of course, you equally have exchange rate risks as well. So that's an issue. So you have a lot of players who would like to come in, but you know, you need to have that enabling environment, which is something that is critically spoken to all the time. So policy is important. But policy shouldn't be to the extent of just sloganeering and mantraing. You have to walk the talk. So we need to stop the rhetoric and we need to just walk the talk. And I think at these sessions or our respective tables, we can all bring in we can all close the deal, as it were. And for us, those of us who have already been close part of the deals, we can share our experiences with you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ade. We still, comme on est toujours là-bas, on va passer le micro à Dr. Dembélé, s'il vous plaît.
Merci. Je pense que de tous les intervenants, je serai le seul à parler en français. Je m'appelle Yacouba Dembélé, directeur général de l'Office national de développement de la riziculture en Côte d'Ivoire. Et ce panel, ce débat est très intéressant pour nous. Et comme les uns et les autres sont intervenus, chaque pays a son expérience. Ce que je voudrais dire, c'est de définir de manière précise ce que le secteur privé veut, notamment dans le développement de la filière, dans la filière du riz. Aujourd'hui, je pense que la plupart des États sont d'accord pour connaître leur rôle. Dans le cadre de la Côte d'Ivoire, l'État est là pour faire les investissements, notamment de maîtrise de l'eau. Le gros barrage, le gros investissement, ça, difficilement vous pouvez donner ça à un privé. Mais après, tout ce qui est mis en place des intrants, aide à la production, transformation et mise en marché, sans le secteur privé, on ne peut pas avancer. Aucun pays ne peut prendre ça comme activité, c'est très lourd, et ainsi de suite. C'est pourquoi nous, en Côte d'Ivoire, nous avons fait quoi? Nous avons fait très tôt appel au secteur privé, depuis 2012, lorsque nous avons mis en place notre stratégie de développement de la riziculture. Ça consistait en quoi? À diviser la Côte d'Ivoire en bassins de production, mais en nous disant que quand un investisseur un privé veut venir nous aider, qui nous aide sur l'ensemble de la chaîne de valeur. Parce que s'il prend un élément de la chaîne, la plupart du temps, il y a des conflits avec les autres éléments de la chaîne. C'est pourquoi nous avons voulu faire appel au secteur privé, mais en leur disant, vous serez responsable des flux financiers, des flux matières. C'est-à-dire qu'au lieu de lui donner une activité particulière dans la chaîne de valeur, on lui donne l'ensemble des activités sur un espace donné. Donc on a divisé la Côte d'Ivoire en bassins de production. Et sur chacun des bassins, on a un opérateur privé qu'on appelle le leader de poule, qui est l'opérateur technique et financier. Il ne vient pas pour cultiver, il vient pour appuyer le producteur pour qu'il puisse avoir les intrants pour produire. Il va aider à l'industrialisation, notamment les unités de transformation. Et puis, à la fin, il est responsable du riz dont il fait la commercialisation. Et comme on a vu que dans un premier temps, il y avait quand même une certaine lenteur dans la mise en place de cela, L'État lui-même dit, bon, ben, non seulement je vais faire les infrastructures de maîtrise de l'eau, mais je vais aussi investir dans la transformation. Parce que vous voyez dans les documents, la Côte d'Ivoire est en train de construire 30 usines, chacune d'à peu près 25 000 tonnes par an, mais extensibles, qui peuvent aller facilement à 50 000 tonnes. Donc l'État fait ses investissements, l'État fait la maîtrise de l'eau, mais le secteur privé, qu'est-ce qu'on lui demande dans sa zone? D'appuyer le producteur pour qu'il puisse avoir un accès facile aux intrants, de faire en sorte que le riz va venir dans les usines et puis ça, les choses elles vont aller vite. Et les usines que nous avons construites ne sont pas gérées par l'État, sont cédées automatiquement au secteur privé. C'est ainsi que, il y a peut-être des opérateurs ici, même Olam, hein, nous sommes en train de voir dans quelle mesure on va céder à Olam, une des usines qui sont construites par l'État, pour aller vite. Comme ça, le privé, je pense, aura, comment dirais-je, un cadre d'évolution plus rapide. Mais même là, on sent que ça traîne le pas. Nous pensons qu'en tant qu'État qui veut promouvoir le riz, le maximum a été fait. Voilà. Mais nous traînons, ça traîne encore le pas. On ne voit pas encore cet engouement. C'est pourquoi ce genre de forum nous permettre de savoir exactement les besoins du secteur privé. Ils veulent quoi exactement pour qu'on en discute, pour que nous, on puisse être dans un élan, comme on dit, vertueux pour pouvoir aller un peu plus vite. Voilà, ça, je lance le débat avec ça pour qu'on puisse continuer le débat. Merci.
Ok, merci, M. Dembélé. Stéphane.
I will talk from a development partner's perspective, from the Competitive African Rice Initiative. Yours has included us, luckily, on his slide. and when we talked about, let's talk about how much have we already invested and what are the investment needs also. Let's say the public sector, the private sector, civil society also in the past 4 years have invested about roughly 28 to 30 million US dollars in the rice sector, and for the next 3 years, starting from next year on, it's another sort of 14 to 18 million US dollars also that are invested into the rice sector in Africa, and that, but Africa is large and we only look at 5 countries, so that's definitely not all that needs to be done, and that's why coordination makes so much sense. But what are, coming back to the question, what are sort of effective business models? We believe in that it is inclusive business models that are market oriented, also that bring along farmers, and I learned a lesson from this morning where I said we shouldn't talk about whether they are small or whatever, so farmers also towards market orientation, work through the entry point of the private sector, also provide productive assets, promote mechanization, promote quality inputs. We have input providers here in this room also to improve productivity. But on the same side also, effective business models would need to lead to improved access to financial resources. So we need to provide business advisory services along the value chain for farmers, input suppliers, processors and marketing organizations to have enough working capital. And that can be done also by having good quality product, you know, that is competitive in the market. At the same time also, we know that African agriculture is not easy, and I think we talked about where irrigation or not irrigation, where it's profitable or not, so we also need to look at possibilities to reduce risk, to make business models also most successful. So in GIZ, in that particular case, partners with AGRA, partners with African Development Bank, partners with BMGF, with Walmart Foundation, with private and public sector organization, with organizations on the ground like Kilimo Trust, who is here represented by Mary, or the Kufa Foundation, where I see Abraham there, actually to have partners on the ground to move things forward also for the benefit of the whole value chain. Then of course CAR is not an investor, we are at best a facilitator of investment. So we need banks, we need financial institutions to look and finance the business models that we are looking at. But what we are good in also, and that is where I encourage all of us, and I see that the room is very full now, is learning and innovation, talk to each other, learn from each other, share experiences, in the best case to repeat where others have already been successful, or to avoid where others have already failed. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Stefan. The last panelist is Ben.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good afternoon. Let me put the statement about irrigation a bit bolder, if I may. We've studied business models for paddy outgrowers, farmers in this country, Ivory Coast. We've studied three models: rain-fed paddy production, passive irrigation, meaning tapping a river or a lake, but no pumping, and active irrigation with pumping. And we found that the first two business models, rain-fed and passive irrigated, are not viable business models for farmers, and only the actively irrigated paddy production produces a reasonable farming income. So my statement is very simple. We need actively irrigated rice fields. That is an expensive hobby, because the benchmark figure is the investment in land leveling, land preparation, dikes, channels, pump stations, and whatever you need is $10,000 investment per hectare. So we need the likes of African Development Bank, World Bank, IFC, Sahel Irrigation Initiative, and all these other beautiful programs. But that's the way to go. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Ben. It looks like we have to reorganize again, because quite a few tables have filled up while the panelists were talking. I'll have to remind participants how we are going about this session. We agreed that every table would have a panelist, and that panelist, after having spoken, would lead the discussion on that table. So we had seven panelists. Now there are more than seven tables, of course. So those tables where there's not a panelist, we want to have you at least decide on somebody who will lead that discussion. Okay? And we'll have the lead questions, what it is that table will discuss, and what kind of solutions you will propose at the end of maybe, let's see, 15, 20 minutes. We'll ask you to come up with that information and then do a wrap-up. Final word from Joost as our resource person. Are we okay with that? Okay.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. So I represent table one, and table one had representatives from FAO, CAS, and Jide from Nirsal, and his partner Ibrahim, also from Nirsal. And we have Sadi from Matlaha, he's from Nigeria. And we have Patrice from IFDC, legendary IFDC, we all know about that. My name is Sanjay Sethi. I represent Phoenix Global DMCC. We are a very large rice business spread across various parts of the world, probably in the top five in the world, or maybe top two. So it's always debatable. So we have a consensus, and that consensus is for investment into the rice value chain, and it is basically on three different lines. So the first scenario, where the borders are closed; second scenario, where it is a landlocked country; and third scenario, where the border is not so much closed, it is not so much porous also, because there will be a normal import duty of about 20-30%, 35%, which is called a gentle import duty, which is very fair to the government, because governments also need some revenue to pay for the roads and the enabling infrastructure that it does. So the first scenario and the second scenario is similar, where either the borders are closed or it's a landlocked country like Chad, like Mali, like Burkina Faso, where the cost of bringing the imported rice to those locations is high enough to provide some sort of safeguard for the local industry and the local farmers to compete. So now, if we have a situation where, which is other than Nigeria, most of the countries in Western Africa, where the imported rice is coming, but we still want that the local industry should take off. So our proposal for investment into a rice mill, which would be like 9 ton per hour capacity, probably over a year, you will have a paddy capacity of over 50,000 or 70,000 tons per year. You would want to put up that kind of a facility. And this is possible if there is either a viability gap funding or there is a support from the government or the enabling environment. So as a table, we could not come to conclusion whether we need subsidy or viability gap funding or we need an enabling environment. But then we had a very interesting contributor on our table, Savitri, from Africa Rice. She said, if we can demonstrate that, yes, the rain-fed production can go up from 1.5 tons to 3.5 tons, which is possible to be taken by the farmer, or if we can demonstrate that the normal irrigated production that we take about 3 to 4 tons, it can be, if not gone up by 2-3 times, but at least 8 to 9 tons, it's possible, then all the economics falls into place, because then the farmer is profitable enough to sell at a low price and the mill is profitable enough to buy at a low price and compete with the imported price, because you also have some sort of insulation in the form of sea freight as well as that as the port charges as well as the some part of import duty. So with this we come to this conclusion that first it has to be demonstrated, because the private sector will come and take this lead of putting the investment on ground if there is either a commitment or a financial support. If either of the two is there, probably if there are 5 private players, at least one will bite the bullet. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Table 1. Is table 2 ready? We're over there with table 2.
Well, we have people from NGO, from public services. I'll continue in English. And a private, if we can say a private. Mm-hmm. Because we had problems in definition of what is private sector. So to answer this question, we just say, well, it depends on the type of private sector we are talking about. So it's very difficult to have generalities on this. So myself, I'm working in CIRAD. I'm a researcher also. So what we wanted to stress is that having business activity somewhere, it's very depending on the context you are in. So we are sorry, but we don't have any generic solution. But we just wanted to say that it will be useful to have general consideration, but it doesn't replace the experience in the country. And that all around the table, we had experience of rice production. And each experience is very different, we have the different challenges and so on. So perhaps what we should suggest, but come from me as a researcher, is that it could be interesting to document all the significant experience, success and failure of the 10 past years, and to try to find some generic argument, because now us around the table, we couldn't find any generic learnings about what is allowing success or failure. But we all think that the context-dependent solution would be very important. It's very difficult to speak about all the situation, the different situation of rice production in Africa.
Okay, thank you, table 2. Okay, we'll go to Ben, Rabobank.
Thank you, and a wonderful table with people I would immediately hire if we were to do this project, so I won't give you their names because then you will hire them, and that cannot be the good thing. A good business plan always has 12 points, so we'll very briefly give you the 12 points of a good business plan for rice. And we begin with the market segmentation. That's point number one. Point number two, a very clear price quality proposition. For instance, offers in aromatic or semi-aromatic rice that do well in the region here. And to facilitate that, of course, number three, inputs, rice varieties that are grown to produce those different product offers. Then we move to agricultural practices and technology. Number four, irrigation. Number five, integrate the results of research and development and innovation in our farmer trainings. And best practices. Number six, so learning from others, from best practice examples. Then we move to the field of business models and organization models. So our point number seven is farmer organizations. And the more generic version of that, point number eight, inclusive business models that integrate, link farmers in various ways to value chain partners. Then number nine is basically that entire value chain partnership. And Kilimo Trust in Tanzania has a wonderful example of that, how different value chain partners, when coming together, can solve each other's problems, including finance challenges. Number 10, digital. Number 11, finance and investment. And number 12, very interesting, I would say, a clear analysis how we invest in efficiency. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Ben, and table three, Jack, table four. Well, yes, but I don't want to go to the other side and then come back here. So.
Well, in fact, I have the feeling that the table two spent more time listening at us than really working. No, just to add on, it's really demand-driven. First, to tell you that at our table, we had the chance to have financiers of mechanization company, a quite solid, experienced person in advocacy who has been designing the first PPP project in Africa, the Markala. By coincidence, we have two people from the biggest, DFI involved in Africa, I will not name them, but we had somebody from the private sector and one from the public sector. We have a banker coming from the biggest European bank in agriculture. Very shortly, we really re-insisted on the demand-driven reaching, targeting the best international quality standards with linking international and local partners to ensure quality standard. And that this is all done in a shared vision and not operated in silo. The second point we made was related to government and private sector, again, to share the vision and commit together with clear commitment, roles, and responsibility that they will sign off and be accountable for. The third point is that it has to be sizable deals with irrigation at the heart, and in doing so, by aligning within innovative multi-stakeholder financing. Can call it blended financing. We had a discussion about the blended financing, which is a seminar that happened earlier. in linking various sources of financing, both public, sustainable for government, export credit financing, private financing from commercial banks, being international or local, and making sure that this whole is bankable. The fourth point we made was really insisting on the value chain, having indeed a strategy, the aggregator at the heart, but it's just they happen to be just at the center, the aggregator, the miller. But the focus should be done first on having the proper irrigation, no business plan until there's clarity about the irrigation. So it's not for the government to do it alone. Government has to sit with private sector for both of them to agree, implement, and make sure that the infrastructure is made on the proper way, that it will remain valid for 50 years or plus. And that will be maintained properly. We're talking about all the infrastructure dams that have been heavily financed at high cost that are today left idle. We insisted on the seeds in saying we cannot see 20 different types of seeds in one area. It completely will kill, downgrade the quality. You cannot have Japonica type with indica, different types of seeds that have been milled together. So there has to be a clear strategy, agreed, understood by everybody. Inputs, you cannot have just any kind of input. Has to be inputs that are adapted to what is needed. It's easy to blend inputs. It's easy for a farmer to buy a bag of inputs of fertilizers that are not really fertilizers. It's too risky for the farmer. So there has to be clarity, there has to be traceability. We could keep on going, but to cut the short story, it applies to the mechanization. It's not simply about deals for tractor supplies. It's making sure that the tractors that come are adapted. We talked about the experience in Yamoussoukro we had, which can be a problem. You have to have the proper equipment at the same time and maintain, and people train for this. The market is clear. There will be no heavy financing investment in agriculture in rice in West Africa as long as, and the person from Olam mentioned it earlier, as long as it's not really linked to a proper regulation. Let's call it protection of local market to be politically correct, I would say. We insisted on the technology. The Africa Development Bank has a huge program that is a catalyst, which is that technology, agriculture transformation agenda, which is key. Technology is absolutely the heart. And in designing solid international local partnership, it's really about going into greenfield projects. That's the beauty about this, right? We can design it the way we want. The same way we have seen a clear transformation in technology in telephone, where Africa has jumped from very simple landlines, has jumped the landline, went directly to mobile. This opportunity exists for well-structured design programs that can scale up quickly. And the last point, it is really about the business model itself, about PPP project executed by PPP companies, where clearly rules and responsibilities, commitment and reward has to be clear. Farming is a business. We're investing, going into it to make money. We just need to make sure that investments are well shared and clear for everybody. And the last point, I think, was the question, are there concrete projects? Yes, we happen to be involved in the same of the project and the one that have been mentioned earlier by Ben. Thank you.
That was table four. They sucked out the air in this room. Huh? Okay, Stefan, see what you can do. So give us some air back. Yeah, air back, yes.
Okay, of course, you know that for a development partner, nothing is impossible.
Okay.
Okay, maybe to answer the, or to give an answer to the first question that Joost had the politeness to remind us about. is what are effective business models. And of course, we said it is inclusive business models, but they need to be sustainable business models. So of course, you can have a hit and run business model. You can earn a lot of money once. The question is, can you do it twice? So that I think is one of the key elements that came also from here. But then, of course, what do you need to match investment needs with in rice also, whether it's public or private? Of course, we had a, how did you name it, a DFI representative at our table or so, but we didn't have an investor, so that's why it was a little bit more complicated. But of course, we have seen that there is capacity building necessary, and there's also capacity building at the private sector necessary. Mary would probably also agree with me that not every private investor is already a good businessman. So you also need to invest into the capacities of private businesses. And we have a very good example here from Burkina Faso, also who have business incubation centers. So one deal concluded is that some of our partners in Burkina Faso may be benefiting from this business incubation to build up their capacities. Then we have another very interesting financing model around, that was crowdfunding. And crowdfunding also is surely something that is very new. But what is needed to make crowdfunding more whatever scalable, and beyond 1,000 euro or beyond 10,000 euros, you need to have the necessarily legal and other framework conditions in place to make things like that happening. So that is something that would actually also be required. Sorry, I lost my notes. Yeah. Then we have experiences, what are business models that are effective and sustainable. We see that contract farming is an important element. Our colleague from IFTC, GIZ and others, we said, okay, yes, we can exchange knowledge and experiences with regard to contract farming to learn on how that can lead to more inclusive business models and make projects more bankable, because you have, who said it's reliable and stable and predictable markets. You also need to have reliable, stable and predictable supplies. So, and contract farming can eventually be one element to it. And then we have also, we had the chance to have around at the table somebody who looks at risks, a risks assessment, being it social risks, institutional risks, weather risks, financial risks. Did I forget any of them? Policy and market risks. So also, yes, what is needed? You need to know the risk structure also in the area where you want to invest. And they are concluding this strategy, these assessments, and I think that is already another deal also where we can look at. And then, of course, hand-holding in the seed sector. We had one organization at the table who does that for companies also and did that, and we have a representative from Zambia said, yes, seeds are one of the things that are lacking in our country also, and maybe we can hope that there will be a little bit more collaboration between the two of them. So these are the four small deals that have been handled at this table.
Thank you. Francophone group.
Voilà, nous allons essayer d'échanger par rapport à aux différentes questions qui ont été posées. Et à partir de deux exemples bien précis de la Côte d'Ivoire et puis du Sénégal, nous avons essayé d'analyser un peu tous ces business models. Je vais partir, tout business model part d'abord de la stratégie qui est définie dans un pays. Nous avons ici en Côte d'Ivoire la stratégie pour le développement de la riziculture qui va conduire nos business models. Moi-même, je suis responsable de Pôle. La Côte d'Ivoire a été divisée en 10 régions. Et je suis leader de pôle d'une de ces régions-là, avec pour rôle d'assurer à la fois, en tant qu'industriel, d'assurer toute la chaîne de valeur, puisque je fais le portage à la fois technique et le portage financier dans cette zone-là. À partir de ce moment-là, des accords que nous avons signés avec l'État joue un rôle en amont, en assurant, comme Monsieur le Directeur l'a dit, la construction des barrages et tout ce qui est gros ouvrages, nous, nous avons pour rôle de conduire le projet dans le cadre de la stratégie. Mais pour cela, il faut un business model. Moi, par exemple, j'interviens sur toute la chaîne de valeur en allant à la fois de la recherche, de la production de semences, de l'aménagement, de l'encadrement des producteurs pour faire du paddy, de la transformation, et on conduit là à la dernière phase qui est la mise en marché. Mais pour cela, il faut pouvoir mettre en œuvre un certain nombre de choses. Et c'est ce que nous essayons de faire en allant vers les banquiers. Et avec ces banques-là, nous essayons de mettre en œuvre un financement structuré. Ce financement structuré, nous l'avons fait avec une banque, avec un système qui est basé sur le nantissement des stocks, avec des tiers détenteurs, avec ce tiers détenteur qui assure, qui est le regard du banquier dans notre, qui est chez moi, qui assure donc le gardiennage du stock. Et donc nous jouons un peu ce rôle-là de catalyseur au niveau de cette poule-là. Ensuite, ce qui est important, c'est que certains l'ont souligné, il y a beaucoup de difficultés avec les producteurs. Pourquoi ? Parce qu'il n'y a pas de confiance entre le producteur et la structure de financement. Ils sont disparates. Nous avons parlé du cas du Sénégal tout à l'heure, le Sénégal qui a mis en place un système de régulation basé sur le marché. Il est difficile de capter à la fois et le paddy et le riz blanc avec les producteurs qui sont réunis de manière disparate. Donc nous, notre rôle, c'est de centraliser un peu cela. Et par la régulation. On a donc ce modèle de régulation que nous avons ici. Nous conduisons ça et nous sommes arrivés aujourd'hui à travailler avec ces producteurs-là, à assurer, à garantir au niveau du banquier et au niveau aussi des fournisseurs d'intrants. Nous garantissons, nous servons de garant pour que cela puisse donner à la fois des engrais et que le financement pour l'exploitation, à la fois les labours, etc., soit assuré à travers nous. Et puis, nous avons ajouté à cela un bel exemple, l'exemple du Sénégal, qui est de faire de la régulation sur le marché. Ils ont mis un système de régulation sur le marché qui est un système assez intéressant, que nous n'avons pas encore en Côte d'Ivoire, mais qui permet à la fois d'assurer la vente du produit, de tout ce qui est fait ici, dans leur pays. Ici, en Côte d'Ivoire, nous avons essayé déjà, nous avons fait un séminaire en ce sens-là, pour assurer à chaque maillon du système un prix rémunérateur. Nous avons fait un séminaire, et ce séminaire nous a permis de déterminer le coût de revient du riz blanc, de savoir la marge qu'il y a à travers la comparaison du prix que nous avons, du coût que nous avons, et du prix de marché d'un riz similaire au riz d'importation, et de partager cette marge-là sur les trois maillons de la chaîne. Et donc, progressivement, nous allons vers ce business model-là pour que chacun puisse, tous les acteurs de la filière, puissent bénéficier de ce qui est fait sur ce marché-là. L'objectif à terme, c'est que aujourd'hui nous sommes à la moitié. C'est-à-dire que la production, nous couvrons une partie de la production, mais il faut que nous puissions couvrir l'autre partie, et pour cela, il faut de la production en masse. Et cette production en masse suppose donc que le producteur qui ne doit plus être un petit producteur, doit être un grand producteur, doit être quelqu'un capable d'apporter, de faire 10 tonnes à l'hectare, ça doit être un businessman. Quelqu'un, ce n'est plus, on peut dire, l'agriculture familiale, on peut l'appeler comme ça, mais cette famille-là est un business. Voilà. On ne veut plus, ici en Côte d'Ivoire, voir dire que c'est de l'agriculture familiale, c'est-à-dire l'agriculture de subsistance. Nous sortons de cela. Nous voulons aller à une agriculture de marché où on peut vivre du riz, où le producteur peut vivre de sa production, où le transformateur peut vivre de son usine, même si, parce que nous avons un maillon hein, qui est assez bien tracé, nous avons des unités qui partent de 500 kg, 1 tonne, 2 tonnes, jusqu'aux grosses unités comme celles que j'ai. Mais tout cela doit être très bien valorisé à travers un business model bien défini. Voilà ce dont nous avons parlé. Et nous avons parlé de l'expérience du Sénégal, qui est une très belle expérience également, et de tout ce qu'il y a. Voilà un résumé. Okay.
Merci. Ok. We'll go to Olam's table, and then finish with Peter at the end.
Thank you. In the spirit of entente cordiale and camaraderie, I'm like Joseph, who's going to speak on our behalf. So I'm ceding that position to him. Thank you.
Ok. Merci, Président. Au niveau de notre groupe, il est composé principalement de trois pays, hein, de la Côte d'Ivoire, du Togo et du Nigeria. L'avantage que nous avons au sein de notre groupe, c'est que nous avons eu des acteurs du secteur privé, notamment des semenciers. Nous avons eu un grand opérateur privé qui intervient au Nigeria, qui est Olam, qui a investi 120 millions de dollars dans le riz, de la production à la transformation et à la mise à marché. Et nous avons deux institutions publiques. L'ONDR, qui conduit la stratégie, et l'ANADER, représentée par son directeur général. Au terme de nos échanges, nous avons balayé un peu les différentes stratégies. Nous avons ressorti plutôt des déterminants pour la mise en place d'un business model effectif, efficient et puis efficace. Donc, nous allons seulement vous lister ces déterminants-là. Le premier déterminant, c'est le marché. C'est le marché. Nous avons dit que pour la formulation d'un business model, il fallait d'abord axer notre approche sur le marché. Le deuxième déterminant, c'est l'intégration même de la chaîne des valeurs. Parce qu'en Afrique, dans notre recherche de compétitivité, il fallait intégrer la chaîne des valeurs pour la maîtrise des coûts, pour la maîtrise de la qualité et aussi pour la maîtrise des quantités. Pour la durabilité de ce modèle, sa pérennisation, pour que l'Afrique puisse évoluer aussi en termes de production durable, nous avons dit que comme troisième déterminant, il fallait mettre au centre l'opérateur privé. Il fallait mettre au centre l'opérateur privé et favoriser un peu tout son environnement d'affaires pour qu'il puisse être profitable et pour qu'il puisse développer son business. Comme quatrième déterminant, nous avons parlé de la régulation. Au risque de répéter un peu ce que le groupe d'avant a dit, on a dit que pour le gouvernement, pour les différents gouvernements, il fallait mettre en place des mécanismes de régulation pour sécuriser un peu les opérateurs qui investissent dans les différents pays africains. Et comme cinquième déterminant, nous avons parlé de la sécurisation même de la production à travers les aménagements, à travers les soutiens aux producteurs, à travers leur renforcement des capacités pour en faire des opérateurs économiques à part entière. Je vous remercie.
Ok, merci. Ok, we wrap up with Peter.
And we had again had a very active and a diverse group around the table. So thank you, table, for your inputs. And we raised I raised a question one level and really tried to challenge the guys to say, you know, what is the deal? Can we kind of at least get close to something as a wrap up? And we really focused on three areas, and we've heard them a bit before, but I'll probably try and package them a little bit different. The funding piece, right, which is key, and I think it's at two levels. One is the real infrastructure investment, and we had a friend from AFDB on the table, and they were very committed to begin to have the conversations with the people in this room to try and make these investments in that infrastructure happen over the coming months and years. So that was pretty close to a commitment or a deal. But as well as that, a level down, and it comes back a bit to the table just there, you know, you talk about the missing middle in Africa. Well, you know, is it really SMEs that are really going to be the driving engine of the rice development in West Africa? And for that, it's not about infrastructure investment, it's not about asset investment in mills, it's really about working capital, trade finance investment. And there we need to get creative. And we didn't get there, we had a starting point, but I think there's really an elephant in the room for an African expression to work on. The second one was all about markets and trade. And it's ironic, we had the conversation here that it's actually easier to export from most of the countries in West Africa to Europe than it is to next door. And this cannot happen. So kind of linked to the SMEs, we need to create more local value and local awareness of local products. And there are people active in that at the table. But we also need to look at sometimes not obvious markets. We had a government representative from Sierra Leone here who said, hey, we as a government, we're a buyer of rice. We have to feed our armed forces. We have to feed our school children. And very often we have to fund farmers to specially produce rice. Well, there's a connection there immediately. There's a market on your doorstep. But we also heard about it's really consumer-led markets that are sustainable or feed that growth. And there we need regional trade. We heard the Honourable President of Sierra Leone yesterday say never before have strategies and policy been as aligned as they are in Africa than today. Yet still there's clearly misalignments because there isn't this regional trade happening in the way it should. So I guess I would challenge nearly on a deal to my friend here from the World Economic Forum to take a leaf out of Akin's book and do a bit of a forcing mechanism on governments in Africa to really begin to align on trade zones and really go beyond the talk and make this happen. And the final one, which is probably critical for my business, but the rice story in general, is about productivity increases, and that came up elsewhere, and that's a combination of a number of things. But really, here we talked a little bit about inputs and affordable inputs and adapting our approach to make this happen. And we have at our table the chairman of Masla Seeds in Nigeria, who's already quite active in this space. 3,000 hectares of managed rice in the current season. And then you look at what we're doing, Syngenta in Nigeria, with some more thousand. And we've agreed around this table with my country head here that we will join forces and partner with Masla Seed for next season in Nigeria. So there's a real deal coming out of here. And with that, the best table till last. Thanks to everyone in the room. Good discussion. Thank you very much.
Great. Well done. Compliments. Okay, listen. I need to wrap up. We have no time. Thank you so much for the energy you put into the conversation. That's the kind of thing we want. We want people to discuss, talk, exchange opinions, disagree, agree, get stuff done. That's what this business is about. So I appreciate your contribution to that. There's actually fact books in both English and French at the exit, which kind of give you a nice, you know, frame of reference. So that's at the exit if you don't have it already. And as a next step, we are looking at coming up with a couple of initiatives to further map what we've been discussing and provide some structure, building on, you know, a lot of the facts and comments made today. So thanks a lot for your input, and let's make this happen together. Cheers.